Many don't believe that either the trumpets with melodious noise or the infernal din await us where the road ends. But most, I fancy, have discovered that to be born is to be exposed to delights and miseries greater than imagination could have anticipated. That the choice of ways at any crossroads may be more important than we think, and that shortcuts may lead to very nasty places.
Hello, and welcome to the Pilgrims Podcast. This is the progeny here at our HQ out in the middle of nowhere. Today, I'm joined by the patriarch, who is half asleep, and I'm also joined by our special guest today for the first time on the Pilgrims Podcast. We have the matriarch. Hello, matriarch. Welcome to the Pilgrims Podcast.
Thank you.
Do you come here often?
Only when you're in town.
And today we're going to be talking about
romance.
You're going to be talking about romance. And in particular, romantic movies, and that sort of thing. We have a little bit of housekeeping. We have one comment from last time around. I believe the patriarch was still going on about his political career and how Mr. Sala should be his vice president. Wasn't that the idea?
I don't know. He's a chemical engineer. He's a lot smarter than me.
Yeah, Daryl says that chemical engineering is his background, so.
Well, maybe you could be his vice president.
They don't live in a real world, you see.
chemical
engineers and electrical engineers, they live in an imaginary world.
Oh, without gravity?
No, that's where I live. I live in a world of gravity, you see. I've got concrete and steel and
footings and all that stuff. We're only 2 minutes in, and already we're bashing the chemical engineers.
No.
Oh, yeah. Gotta make...
It's theoretical.
It's like the great Army-Navy rivalry within engineering.
They gotta have great imaginations.
What have you guys got?
Mostly...
Mad math skills?
Firm foundations.
Yeah, mostly...
That is definitely something you would say, Mom.
He's a structural engineer.
I don't have much of anything. It's been a tough week. It's been a hard weekend, like Wobegon.
Well, at least we're inside and warm instead of going out looking for birds like we were planning on doing tonight.
That's right.
The weather's been pretty crazy around here recently. We had, one minute it was 70 degrees out, then it was pelting hailstones the size of gumballs. Of course, among other things, have exciting events that have happened around the Pilgrims Podcast HQ, we've had a visit from a bear, which is something that only happens in our neck of the woods, I suppose. Probably not many of our listeners run into that very often.
Yep, he had a go at our dog food.
Yeah, out in the barn. Now, Patriarch, you saw him close up. Well, describe the bear. This is your big moment.
He had a hat on. And he said, only you can prevent forest fires.
Well, see, at a train station... His name was Paddington. Yeah, well, we have had a bear. A very, very large black bear, which has turned up several times. So, anyway, that's the most exciting thing that has happened to us in the last 2 weeks, and we haven't managed to record this episode because... Come on, quick, guys, come up with an excuse.
Because we've been doing bear... Control.
Yeah, that was it. We were fighting bears, and I was fighting finals, and getting signed up for the spring semester and an internship over the summer. So, that is what the Pilgrims
She's
Podcast is.
Starting her political career.
I am starting my political career. I'm going to be interning at a political office.
Is it Hillary 2016? Is that where you're
going? It is. That's where I'm going. Yep, I'm gonna work for her. I mean... I think that she has a real vision for this country.
I wouldn't let Bill Whittle find out about that.
You know what I think they ought to do? Is I think they ought to have more wrestling, and more preachers ought to be wrestlers.
I thought you were going to say that they ought to just have a wrestling contest for the presidency, because that would be pretty good
today.
Idea.
Is it some kind of a tag team grudge match between some of these preachers?
Okay, so hypothetically, Tim Keller versus John Piper.
Yes, that kind of thing. You know, with Alistair Begg in the corner. And
well, Alistair Begg would just kind of destroy everybody. Well, Buddy Baucom, I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name. He's like actually a black belt.
There you go.
So
how about John Hagee and T.D. Jakes?
Yeah. Now that would be one to see.
They would.
The heavyweight championship.
Heavyweight division.
I feel like we're on the Reform Pub now. You know.
Be on the
Joel Osteen versus Billy Graham.
No, the guy from Mars Hill.
Rob Bell. Now that would be one to see. Rob Bell versus Joel Osteen.
In the lightweight division.
Yes.
Theoretically and weight-wise, too.
Yep. That ought to be entertaining. You know, I think Rob Bell would probably just give up immediately and say, love wins.
Joel Osteen would say, me too.
Yeah,
I claim that.
Name it and claim it. Yeah, it's like there would be some sort of joke, you know, if Rob Bell got in a fight, who would with Rob Bell, who would win? Love. Okay. Well, I guess that's all we. Oh yeah, Daryl also mentioned last week we talked about movie soundtracks from
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, back in the midst of time, before finals. We talked about John Williams and Hans Zimmer and a bunch of other composers, but we did not mention John Barry, who Mr. Sala mentions. And I'd actually never heard of John Barry. The Patriarch and the Matriarch had not either. So it looks like, from this link you provided me with, He's most known for the Bond movies and Out of Africa, which I have heard that soundtrack, and Dances with Wolves and a few others. Well, actually, a lot of others, but I haven't seen any of the other movies. And actually, I haven't seen any of the Bond movies except the two of the Daniel Craig movies. And I thought they were okay, but I wasn't blown away. I've never been as big a Bond fan.
It's really iconic. I mean,
I like Indiana Jones better.
It's as iconic as you can get almost with movie.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I've heard the music, definitely. My godbrother has the video game and it plays on loop.
You know, another one we didn't mention is Jerry Goldsmith. Is it Goldsmith? I think it's Goldsmith. And
who?
We need to look at. We'll look at him up. We'll look him up after this, because he just did a ton of stuff. I think he did maybe Patton, and probably, I don't know. I think he did, but I remember just seeing tons of movies growing up with his name on it. None of them come to mind except Patton, I think. And I think he did that. So
Jerry Goldsmith.
Mm-hmm. Real. My guess is he did a lot of war movies too. But, are you looking now?
I'm looking him up. Let's see.
What else did you do?
Star Trek, The Next Generation, looks like. Star Trek, Mulan, Rambo, The Mummy.
Yeah. I mean, probably not.
Patton.
A lot of.
Shiloh. More Star Trek. Lots and lots of Star Trek.
Not real highbrow stuff, but.
Gremlins, too.
Tons of stuff. I mean, you can look down through here. I mean, he's just, you know. He was prolific.
Twilight Zone, the movie. Yeah, I mean, like.
And a lot of those were, you know.
John Williams, the thing about John Williams is he almost always ends up scoring for movies that are really good movies. That's probably because
Gunsmoke,
Rawhide. That's probably because he ended up with Spielberg so early on, you know. So he
hitched his wagon to a star.
He did. Yep.
That's the way I got. That's what I did when I got married.
Aww. We ought to have an aww track just for this episode.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, speaking of which, you know, we need to hear the story of how you two met.
That's another time.
The matriarch loves to tell that story.
That'll be another time.
I think it's a
next
great
Valentine's Day, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, and you'll hope I forget.
Well, this is a romance episode.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Well, okay, fine. We won't talk about it. Another soundtrack composer that I want to mention briefly that we didn't mention was Patrick Doyle. I like him pretty well. He did Henry V and Much Ado About Nothing and Aragon and Thor and Cinderella and Hamlet. He did a bunch of Kenneth Branagh movies.
Yeah, so, that's good stuff.
Yeah, he tends to hitch himself to Kenneth Branagh, so...
Kind of a falling star.
Yeah, a falling star who spends most of his time brooding in Scandinavia about criminals these days.
I once heard somebody call him the lipless wonder, and ever since then I can't get past that. He doesn't have any lips. I mean, I don't either, but he especially doesn't. I'm looking into Botox, though, so.
They do make lipstick that, you know, has collagen or something like that in it that's supposed to make your lips fuller.
And, yeah, well, I hear that, they're, like, one of the Kardashians made that challenge. The patriarch is trying to do a duck face now. They're like, so maybe you could do a selfie in that whole hashtag campaign about, you know. Anyway.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, good for you. That restores my faith in you.
But it was so easily shaken.
You were sitting over there making a duck face.
I still think we have to tell the story about how we met, because that's much more interesting than this duck face conversation you're carrying on.
Okay. All right, the matriarch is taking charge.
Okay. Well, I always like to say... What do I like to say?
You like to say Daddy was a stalker.
Yes, I like to say he was a stalker because it makes for a more interesting story. But what happened was I was at a homecoming, and he saw me there and followed me home.
You have to tell the people what that means.
For our heathen listeners.
Okay.
Like, you know, people that aren't from the South.
Okay. A homecoming at church is... When they have usually special music, they have special bands in at church, and then they have a meal
dinner
afterwards.
On the grounds.
Yep. And Alan had seen me there, and he followed us home. So,
because he was smitten.
Thus the stalking began.
And it never stopped.
That's right. Ever since.
So you had to marry him.
But what was so funny was when we stopped the car, I heard someone, after a few minutes, knock on my window because we hadn't gotten out yet, and I rolled the window down, and he said, "Your skirt is caught in the door." So, you know, all the way home, apparently my skirt was a... beacon, you know, a waving flag telling him to come after us.
It was symbolic. Yeah, you know. And he would not have had any way to start a conversation if your skirt had not been cut in that door.
That's right. That's right. He would have just skirted the issue. So, I, you know, thanked him, took my skirt out of the door, and proceeded to roll the window up, you know, with an embarrassed, reddened face, and he said, "By the way, I saw you at church and wondered if I could have your phone number that maybe we could go out sometime."
He's one of those infamous church stalkers.
So that's how we got started.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Does the patriarch have anything to contribute to that?
Well, technically, I just stalked for a few minutes. Technically, stalkers don't ask for phone numbers.
Well, I just like to spice it up, give it a bit of romance. That is our topic tonight.
And I guess we'd better go ahead and get into our topic, unless there's anything in particular you two want to talk about.
No, ma'am.
Nope. Okay. Well, My first question is, what is romance?
Your quest. What is?
My, you see, the matriarch loves to make movie references. That was a Monty Python. So, you know, if we just start randomly quoting something that sounds like Pride and Prejudice, then that's probably because we are doing that. And it's a romance episode. We're going to have to do that at some point tonight anyway. Okay, but my first question is, what is romance? And you guys want to have the first crack at that one, or do you want me to try and throw something out?
You
want to
go first?
You go ahead.
Well, I'm probably going to give you an idea or a setting instead of a definition, you know, because I'm not really sure how to define it. But when I think of romance, I think candlelight, you know, a table for two, soft music, and the one I love sitting across from me.
Does it always involve candles?
No, but when I think of romance, I think of, you know, football. setting a feeling of romance.
It doesn't involve football, though.
There you have it, folks. The difference between men and women, in a nutshell. The patriarch's idea of romance involves football. A girl to watch the game with me.
Well, let's put it this way. When Alan proposed, he could have just said, "Will you marry me?" But he actually put my ring in a box of chocolates, like Forrest Gump would say, you know.
I told you, movie references. That's two so far.
He had eaten his favorite piece of candy, which was the chocolate-covered coconut piece, and put my engagement ring in the little paper, you know, like the kind of like a miniature paper from a Reese cup. And I opened it up, and there was the ring, and he proposed. And I call that a romantic way to propose. Instead of just saying, "Do you want to get hitched?" Which is what some country folks have said in times past.
We know some little kids at our church, and the little girl has a tendency to want to marry the boy. And one day she walked up to him and she said, "Micah, you're going to marry me." And he said, "Yes, I am." Which I think that would make a great movie proposal. Sometimes, "You're going to marry me."
And they're,
"Yes,
what, about
I am."
4 years old?
Yeah, Micah's four. I think Autumn's probably four, too. And they would make a cute couple. So,
well, I'm kind of disheartened because the patriarch hasn't added anything to our discussion about romance.
So what is the patriarch's idea of romance?
See, this is the problem with this whole thing, is that I have to tread so carefully. It's like threading a needle.
Because this is a family podcast.
No. It's, you know, well, okay. It's an idea. It's like summertime.
Okay.
And it doesn't last very long. See there, it's like a sunset maybe, because it's the golden hour.
Summertime is
and
easy.
And then it's gone, but you
don't
know,
have to worry
and
about
so,
snow.
Are you gonna sing?
Yeah, well, you know, it's like the summertime love.
It's musical accompaniment.
It's Sunshine Love. That's the name of the song.
And so it's this idea, but it's and of course it. I think everybody has their own perceptions of what it is, but it's really not something I guess it's not something you can. I don't know if it's something you should really
attempt to define.
Attempt to define, right? Like I said, it's kind of like a sunset. But you don't really.
Well,
everybody sees it differently.
I would say that it might be more helpful to look at romance as a verb, I mean, you have romance as a noun. I'm looking here at Merriam-Webster right now. And it talks about medieval romances or, you know, just love and emotional attraction and, or a love affair and so on. And but if you look at romance as a verb, then it kind of comes more into the idea of one party pursuing the other party, that a romance is one person pursuing something. I don't know if that's what they meant in the Grail romances when they were always talking about, you know, pursuing the Grail or whatever, but when I think of that, I think of, you know, the handsome prince pursuing the princess, Rinderella, and that I think that on a basic level, that's kind of what men and women are programmed to do. Is men are just kind of programmed to go and seek out a mate, you know, and women are here to look pretty, and you know, that's simplifying and everything, but on a biological level, we do, that it tends to be the way it works out. At least, you know, I was listening to Robbie Zacharias one time, and he was talking about how so many men, I think, are dissatisfied with their marriages because once they have won the prize, they feel like they're not pursuing anything anymore. Like, they don't have anything else to win. They don't have anything else to find out. And they find that boring, you know, that, okay, well, now that I have achieved it, you know, it's like a dog catching its tail. It's, what do I do with it now? But I think, I think the way he got out of that was by saying, well, once you have married that person, then your next pursuit should be to find out more about them. He says, and there's always something more to find out about women. He says, because we are so different. So that's one idea. And I think that continues towards the romance of the Gospels, of God pursuing us. A romance is also something that's going to be dangerous and adventurous. That there's, if a romance, there has to be some sort of uncertainty there. Am I going to get it? Am I going to achieve this? Am I going to succeed?
There's kind of a tension.
Yeah, there's a romantic tension. And a lot of times that tension disappears when you get married because you cease to realize that now your tension should be about trying to keep learning about that person or trying to keep achieving things with that person.
Well, the movie version of romance has got the tension, right? The real the real version of romance, it's not necessary. I mean, like your mom was saying, is that, you know, once you're married, those things that she was talking about are still just as important as before, but the tension's not there because of the marriage. But that doesn't mean that it's not important. At that point, it's driven by love, right?
But there's a tension there because you realize that there is absolutely nothing keeping this person by your side except love, you know, and that's a very exciting and very satisfying thought. But there is that tension, you know, the idea that this person keeps pursuing you, you know, and that, you know, so there is a tension there.
Well, yeah, I guess you could say that.
Now, to me, I think of a romance, you know, Alan mentioned an idea, I almost think of it as a mood or setting a mood, you know, and with love, it's something that, you know, at least from a biblical standpoint, you know, kind of like the postal service, come rain, come, you know, you're going to stand firm in that relationship. And romance can sometimes be a flighty thing.
That's true.
So you think of Bill and Hillary Clinton whenever you think of romance.
I'm not sure that word enters my thoughts with them, but... some people, let us say, have many romances that didn't possibly mean much
A lot of people, I think, don't. I saw a couple there as I was leaving the office today, and then maybe this isn't fair, but as they were walking down the street, she was about four steps behind him. I was like, you know, that just bugs me. You know, I think a lot of, and I'm not trying to fill in the blanks with who knows what was going on. Maybe she was just catching up. but I see that quite a bit, actually, in my little office where I see people walk by. Is, you know,
as you do sociological research from your,
I have about,
from your window?
Yes, I have about, you know, 3 or 4 seconds of time as they walk in front of our office to break down their psychological makeup. And but you'd be surprised what you can get in 3 or 4 seconds sometimes.
Like that one guy that passed by and was looking at the chalk that we had written outside.
Yeah.
That was, we were going through a phase when we would, again, this is random movie quotes, we were quoting Bring Wood and Oil from Lord of the Rings, which makes no sense out of context, and, you know, it's just one of those things. We just quoted it, you know, for no reason whatsoever. And we had chalked it outside the door, and this guy walked up and looked at it. And he just got this bizarre look on his face, like, what? And we were all standing about 3 or 3 feet from him behind the window, and he couldn't see us, but we were all just dying laughing. So, anyway, if you're walking down an abandoned little brick street in Marion, Virginia one day, people are probably laughing at you.
Yep. Especially if there are nonsensical quotes on the
yes, we do that
sidewalk.
I don't like it. Okay.
But I want to say before you move on, talking about romance, Alan was saying, you know, when you're married, things are different. But I do feel like that it is important to continue to have romance in your relationship. You know, you can get so busy just with doing the mother thing, you know, the father thing, the work thing, the church thing, you know, that you just go through the motions. And I think you have to take time to sometimes create romance. And we try to go out for date nights, you know, once a month or at least once every other month. I'd like to do it once a month, but I think that really is a good idea to, you know, create some romance in our relationship. We've been married almost 24 years.
You taking notes, folks? Well, if romance is defined as a pursuit, then Michael Card talks a lot about how the Old Testament is about God starting with a relationship with Abraham and the Israelites, and then growing in intimacy throughout the prophets, you know, becoming more intimate. And then ultimately, a complete intimacy is when he comes and becomes one of us, you know, so that he can reach out and have that relationship one-on-one. And it's a growth of intimacy to become more intimate, know more about each other, so that we can know more about him. And it's about knowing God. It's about, you know, and that's the progression. So, you know, on a smaller level, once you have married someone, that doesn't mean that your pursuit or not of them, your knowledge of them, your pouring yourself out for them, your growth of intimacy with them can stop. All of those things are part of romance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least that's kind of my definition, but we better move on.
Can I tell you something quickly before you move on?
No.
Well, I'm going to tell you anyway because I'm your mama. When I was growing up, when I would go out on a date, you know, my mom always told me, now, you make the guys respect you. They will treat you like you expect them to. And when they would come to pick me up, my mama was watching outside the window, or inside the window. She was watching, you know, us outside the window to see if the guy would open my door for me. Of course, he had to come to the house first, but when we were leaving, and, you know, there have been times when I would stand next to my door after he'd gotten in behind the driver's wheel, and he'd look over, and I wasn't in the car, and he would have to get back out and walk around and come and open my door for me. And I think, you know, I think,
I only had to do that once.
So. I think men will treat you like you
remembered after that one.
But I have told Alan that I really appreciate his still opening my doors for me. It makes me feel special that he, you know, treats me like a lady.
Okay. Well, that's the door opening philosophy marital counseling.
Many doors in your future.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. We have 9 questions, and we have gone through one of them. So some of these we're probably not going to get to. That's okay anyway, because they're half baked. All right. Well, we were going to talk about romantic movies and kind of our top 5.
Yay!
Yeah, the matriarch is a big fan. The patriarch, not so much.
He's about to fall asleep.
Yeah. Well, who wants to start off with their top 5 list? I think the patriarch looks like he wants to.
Well, you know my number one. You want to go first? You
go
can
ahead.
Guess.
You go ahead.
Pride and Prejudice. Jane
Shocker.
Austen.
I can't believe it.
And the only... No, not the adulterated version. Thank you very much. But the A&E
matriarch
version.
Does not approve. Colin Firth, baby.
Yep, Jennifer Ely.
The lake scene.
Well, I like when he proposes when they're on their country walk. That's
yeah,
one of my
you also,
favorite
you also
parts.
Like the lake scene. Everybody likes the lake
yeah,
scene.
Yeah, I like the lake scene. I also like the piano scene where she's turning the pages for Georgiana and he's looking at her with this loving look.
The matriarch can quote entire scenes of that movie at length. She has seen it, what, patriarch, maybe?
Probably 50 times.
Probably 50, all 5 hours of it.
I don't know about at length, but I can do a few quotes.
Well, you might have to entertain us with those at some point. Okay, well, is that the patriarch's number one romantic movie?
Yeah, I think it does what it's, you know, trying to accomplish. It does it very well, right? Talk about tension. I mean, you watch it the first time, and if you're not familiar with the story, then there's just tons of it, you know, going back and forth, and one person's got kind of the upper hand, and then the other one does.
Well,
you keep wondering, you know, well, how does this get resolved?
Yeah, I mean, I think that.
And everything's not quite what it seems to be.
With that movie, you kind of know that they're going to end up together because of the genre and because of the time period and because it's not going to surprise you. But it's still a movie and a story that can continue to build psychological tension even if you've watched it 100 times. They just, you know, just the scenes between Jennifer Ely and Colin Firth just crackle with tension.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they really...
The dance scene, that's probably my favorite scene, the ballroom scene.
Yeah.
Where they're sparring as they dance. Oh, what tangled webs we weave.
Yeah, and they have way more chemistry than Keira Knightley and Matthew McFadden. I'm sorry, but that is just the truth. I liked Keira Knightley in Pride and Prejudice. I that's like the only movie I've liked her in practically, but Colin Firth is the only Mr. Darcy.
Amen. Verily.
Yes. And that was as a somewhat of a purist with regards to Pride and Prejudice, it was rather difficult to watch that with anything approaching just an unbiased look. Though I still enjoyed it. It had its moments in a kind of bizarre fanfiction-y kind of way.
Now our friends, the Newberries, Daniel and Christian Newberry, call those types of films horse and buggy romances, which, you know, that's pretty, pretty straightforward, easy to see why it's that way. But
and
I watch
a lot of those.
I think some of the things that I've been saying about Mr. Long here, you know, treating me like a lady, that shows up in that movie, you know, the properness of their behavior, except for George Wickham, you know. And
well, frankly, George Wickham is much more proper than a lot of people these days.
Well, not behind closed doors.
Well, okay.
But he puts on a good face. But, you know, just what he was doing back then was just shocking to them. Nowadays, it's kind of like anything goes for the majority of
people. Have you read Wuthering Heights?
No.
Well, we better move on to movie number two.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, because that's where you're coming.
Probably our mutual friend.
Okay, well, for those of you that don't know, our mutual friend is one of Charles Dickens' lesser-known stories. It's one of his longest books, but it's still lesser-known. It's actually the penultimate novel that he wrote, the last full-length novel he wrote. And it's about, well, there are two or three going on at the same time, if you count Pleasant Riderhood and Mr. Venus. And you have Bella Wilfer, who's this kind of really shallow young woman, and John Rokesmith, who's a creepy secretary who's in love with her. And she's
speaking of stalking.
Yeah, speaking of stalking. That entire story is basically about stalkers. I mean,
he's always watching her and following her.
I did a count in my review of that. I think there were like seven, because you have Eugene and Mr. Headstone, John Rokesmith, Rogue Riderhood.
Who's Rogue Riderhood stalking?
Mr. Headstone. Yeah.
I was thinking, does he have a romantic interest?
Well, Headstone, I certainly hope not.
And Headstone's stalking Eugene Rayburn, too.
Yeah, and circles and circles. And then, let's see, who else was it? I can't remember now. Maybe, Silas Wegg and Mr. Venus stalked Mr. Boffin for a while there.
Yeah.
And so everybody's stalking somebody in that story. But we're talking about the version from 1998, I believe. And
with Anna, is it Anna Friel?
Anna Friel, yeah.
Friel.
And Stephen McIntosh. Yes, and Paul McGann of Doctor Who fame.
Mm-hmm.
And
Dominique.
And Keeley Hawes of Wives and Daughters and Ashes to Ashes fame. And that's a really good movie.
I can't think of Mortimer's last name, but it's Dominique.
Mullen, or something like
that. He does
not know how it's pronounced. One of the interesting things about that movie is that between Bella and Rokesmith, it shows a relationship in which one partner has to kind of inspire the other partner to grow up. One partner starts out very immature, and the other partner has to, by loving them, teach them what love really is. You know, it's kind of a Hosea story. Like Michael Card says in that song, only a fool loves like you do, or something like that. How he keeps on forgiving me, how he keeps his sanity.
Hosea, you're a fool.
A fool to love someone like me.
A fool to suffer silently.
But sometimes through your eyes I see, I'd rather be a fool.
Mm.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite songs. And I really love Hosea relationships in movies anyway. Because I'm a sucker for just this really kind of sweet and good guy that, you know, and the girl who doesn't like him at first because she's a brat, and then he kind of redeems her. And you see that in Our Mutual Friend, and you see that in
Emma,
yeah. And I've always liked Mr. Knightley better than Mr. Darcy, partly because of that, I think.
Emma was one of our choices, too.
Yeah, that was actually, I think, your original second choice. My favorite version of that would be Gwyneth Paltrow. Even though, you know, she and Jeremy Northam are way too old for the parts, I just really like them.
Yeah, I like them better.
Well, Emma was supposed to be like 18, I think.
Well, she could have pulled off. How old was she when she's in?
Probably in her 30s.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll have to look that one up.
I bet she's 25.
Okay, we're going to have to look it up. Gwyneth Paltrow.
Like you're going to trust what you find on the internet?
Okay, well, she is now 42. So, she was born in 1972.
She's my younger
brother. And the movie came out, Emma, 1996. So, yeah, she was in her 20s.
1996. I thought the acting was good in this one, in this version.
Yeah, so she, you know, I thought she looked about right. I mean, I thought he did too.
Yeah.
Age-wise.
She acted older than 24, that was part of it.
There was another one of those Jane Austen movies that had Emma Thompson in it. It was completely ridiculous.
Sense and Sensibility.
She looked like she was twice the age of the...
Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in ages. I heard it was pretty good.
It's ridiculous.
Patrick Doyle did the music to that one.
Well, some people like that one, but I never have really cared for it. I don't think it compares to Pride and Prejudice.
The sets are great. The acting's great, but it's just something that just doesn't work. And I think it's the chemistry. They're just like, no way, I don't buy it.
Emma Thompson wrote the screenplay to that one.
Well, there you have it.
Ang Lee directed it.
You know... Oh,
that was his first English language movie.
Did you have another movie, Alan?
It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Is that one?
That's. I don't think so.
They're in love with money.
they're in love with chasing each other around.
Pursuit of money.
Pursuit of money. Yep. Well,
Treacherous Mountain.
What was my third one? The Painted Veil.
That was a really good movie.
Which we just saw recently, so that's probably obscuring my.
Well, Yankee Gospel Girl recommended that one to us, actually. So,
hello. It's a great movie.
We really liked it.
Yeah.
I'm a very hard-hearted person, and I was crying during it.
Hard-hearted person. Yeah. My mother cries during commercials. I mean, you know, the little puppy dies.
Now.
And it is waterworks.
I'm not that bad, but I did cry at Touched by an Angel, and it wasn't even
theologically
correct.
Okay.
Maybe that's why I cried.
I probably would have been crying for a very different reason. Yeah.
Anyway, it was beautiful, I thought. It was, you know, full
Touched
of...
Touched by an Angel?
No, the Painted Veil.
I'm not going to let you forget that one.
Marking you off of my will. Out of my will.
Yeah.
The Painted Veil just had a lot of, you know, tough life lessons. You know, it was a film about growing up for a good part of it and just learning what is truly beautiful and attractive and, you know, learning to value things that are lasting and deep instead of shallow and fleeting.
Yeah. It also had pretty pictures.
The scenery was beautiful.
But would you call it a romance?
Yeah, because it was about them pursuing each other.
Well, that's a very different kind of romance than what we were talking about earlier.
Well,
there was no flowers and...
Well, it's a very different type of romance from the Hollywood format, which is to say, guy meets girl. Usually, they don't like each other at first, but then they do, you know.
Guy follows girl home.
Girl has skirt indoor. Guy asks for phone number. They are fated to be together. Guy dies tragically at end of movie.
There probably was some romance in the beginning
of The Fault in Our Stars
of the movie, but everything happened so quickly, there wasn't a lot of time for
it. Well, it was an interesting movie. I wasn't, and part of it was just that I think I've been watching something else earlier in the day, and I was really still emotionally caught up with that. I can't even remember what it was now, but I wasn't blown away by it. I didn't. Yeah, I think that might have been it. You know,
she only gets teary-eyed over SpongeBob episodes.
It's deep, man. It's deep, you know. It just hits you right here.
So many leagues under the sea. Bikini Bottom.
Yep. So SpongeBob and Sandy. It's romantic. Anyway, I wasn't blown away. I didn't think they had very much chemistry. I mean, it was partly because I wasn't expecting exactly what I got. I was expecting more of a Hosea romance, you know. But he was just as messed up as she was. And that's another thing and that was kind of interesting because you don't see that very often as a romance where they're both really messed up, but they both have to kind of grow up.
Why was he messed up? He wasn't messed up.
Well, he was cold and, you know, he kind of transported her out to the middle of nowhere, and he married her even though he knew she didn't love him and was kind of being pressured into the marriage, and he was very emotionally undemonstrative, and, you know, he had lots of issues, too.
No.
Not the same issues.
No, he didn't.
He just didn't. I tend to agree with both of you and to disagree with both of you.
You can't both be right.
Well, I think that
there's another movie quote.
He could be, you know, he could be very in the beginning of the movie. He wanted to do anything to make her happy, and as it went along, he became very harsh because of some of the things she did, and couldn't forgive her. He wanted to punish her. So, you know. He did love her, but he wanted to control and punish her for what she had done. So if he had any faults, it was an unforgiving heart.
Yeah. But he did offer for her to get out. He didn't force her to go to up the river with him.
It was that or scandal.
Well, he offered...
I know, but what I'm saying is that he... He knew that the only way, well, he didn't know, but that was the premise, was that the only way to really love her was to break her. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
I didn't get that vibe from him, because I thought that was what he was doing at first, but he didn't really
I know.
Pursue I know. That.
He, I know.
And I remember
it happened independent of him, and he seemed surprised when it happened.
The mother, you know, superior from the convent, I think it was talking about him, that he didn't look at her properly, that he didn't even, you know, look at her.
Yeah.
He make eye contact or anything.
No, the guy.
What? Dudes don't make eye contact.
No, the guy, the little woman.
Oh,
guy.
Yes.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's right.
Toby Jones. That was interesting, too, because he almost never plays a good character. Well, people who have not seen that movie are going to be very confused right now.
It's a good movie.
We are too.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was a pretty good
movie.
But I liked it.
It had a lot of, you know, redemptive themes.
The only other two movies I can think of where two characters kind of have to grow up is Victoria and Albert, which was an okay movie, you know, kind of TV movie back from the 90s or something. And Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind with Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet, which you two have not seen. And it was an okay movie. I wasn't blown away with that one either, but they both have to deal with the fact that if you're going to love somebody, then you're going to have to open up to allowing them to hurt you, that you're going to have to take that risk. And that was a fairly mature romance. Anyway.
Another one, didn't we list Jane Eyre?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was the next one, you know, if it was in that order, but that was one of the ones that
And that's
liked.
Another romance where one partner kind of has to make the other love the other one into growing up. Though, this is about the only instance I know of a case in which it's the woman who was doing that. Normally, it's the guy who has to deal with that, you know. I don't know why that is, you know, maybe it's just the patriarchy. But in that one, Jane Eyre is much more mature than Mr. Rochester, who's very selfish. And
she's had some pretty hard...
Why are y'all busting on the guys?
Oh, wow, come on.
Defensive, aren't we?
Yep. Well, I mean, like I was saying, it's almost always the guy who has to kind of make the girl grow up, and you're all like, well, I think that the husband was perfect, and he didn't have any flaws.
Well... I must say, you know, Jane Eyre had a lot of tough life lessons. I mean, she came from a, right. You know, an abused background and, you know, was in a school where they just were very cruel and heartless. And so, you know, she had to grow up pretty early. But in your defense, I do get tired of movies that make men out to be weak and that women have to save them all the time, where they kind of demasculate. What's the word I'm looking for?
Demasculinize, yeah.
Yes.
Like Iron Man 3.
I don't like that. I want a man to be a man.
Okay. Patriarch, this is where you come in.
That's right.
I like Mr. Rochester.
I liked him too.
He's not the world's best role model, though.
Well,
nope.
You know, welcome to life.
Everybody needs a wife now, in
you
the
see,
attic.
He's
an
just
extra wife in the attic.
It's a. Do you have something to tell us?
No. What?
Do you have an extra wife in the attic?
Is there an extra wife in our attic?
Yep. See, he's got to defend the guys. Maybe. Oh, Mr. Rochester.
I don't have to.
Bertha Long.
Okay. Well, speaking of a movie in which the guy turns out to be a jerk, my favorite romantic movie. We've already done used twos. Your romantic favorites. My favorite movie.
Princess
romantic
Bride.
Movie. No, though that one is up there. Favorite romantic movie of all time, drum roll please, The New World.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming.
Was that sarcasm I detected? Surely not.
Don't call me Shirley.
Well, I really like that one because that is another one where all the characters have to grow up. And it ends up being a love triangle way late in the movie. And you didn't see that one coming either. You know, it's about Pocahontas, and actually it's my favorite movie of all time. Period. But
better than Disney Pocahontas,
just a little bit. Yeah. So I always have a soft spot for movies with singing animals and politically correct storylines. This movie was set in Virginia. In Jamestown, they actually went to Virginia and rebuilt everything, and it's about Pocahontas and John Smith and John Rolfe, and that's your love triangle. And I love the movie, and I want to do it sometime. I want to do a podcast on it, but it really, I think, creates a mythology for America in a way that the Arthurian legends or Lord of the Rings created it for England.
That's a neat way of looking at it.
And it takes character types, and it casts it all within the boundaries of kind of a symbol as America being paradise, the Garden of Eden unfallen. And then and then John Smith arrives, and he arrives under a cloud as it is. He was already in trouble. And Christopher Plummer says, okay, well, this time you get off. And because we want to build a utopia here, and we can't start off by killing somebody. And it might have turned out better if they had. But they fall in love, and John Smith is there for... He can't decide whether he loves her more or loves the idea of ambition and being a great explorer more. And he's very ambitious, and whenever he's away from her, you know, his lovey-dovey feelings fade. And he's like, well, he says, there's something that I forget, that I know when I'm with you, that I forget when I'm away. That's one of the lines in the movie. And so his love is very much built on...
Well, he doesn't say it like that.
His problem is...
He's looking up... He's looking up into the trees when he's...
Well, it's Colin Farrell, so he's like, there's something I know when I'm with you that I forget when I'm away.
When I'm around the corner.
And his eyebrow says something else.
And his eyebrow does say something. His eyebrows are like a totally different actor on his face. And the Oscar goes to Colin Farrell's eyebrows. So, yeah, you know, of the great expressive eyebrows, there's Michael Kitchen, and then there's Colin Farrell. And Pocahontas, she's also very flawed, and she's got this idea that he's like a god to her. He's somebody who's just perfect. She just worships the ground he treads on. And of course, she's completely mistaken about that too, so she has to learn to grow up and deal with who he really is. And John Smith is somebody who wants to marry Pocahontas, but he realizes she doesn't love him, and he has to decide whether he's going to marry her. You know.
Oh, like the guy in the Painted Veil.
Yeah, and he has her marry him, even though he knows she doesn't love him.
Just like the guy in the Painted Veil.
And later on, he realizes that was wrong.
Just like the guy in the Painted Veil.
You're getting it now. We are on the same wavelength.
Yeah, but anyway...
The veil has been torn in two.
Yes. So that's my favorite romantic movie. Another of my favorites, which the Patriarch does not like.
Enchanted?
Excuse me. No, not Enchanted. The Matriarch, one of her favorites, is Enchanted, which does involve singing animals.
And dragons.
I love Enchanted.
And the guy not being very macho and having to be rescued by the woman at the end.
Well, he rescues her kind of toward the beginning.
Symbolically? Like when she falls off of a building and he falls underneath her?
Well, he catches her under
the He doesn't side. Catch her, though. Okay, I really like A Room with a View, which is a movie that is less about... And there is a romance there, but it's kind of more about this young woman's spiritual awakening. She lives in a world that's confined by traditionalism and yada, yada, yada. And she... And, you know, normally I really don't like movies where they have this traditionalist culture that's kind of, you know, oppressing the protagonist, you know, and they just got to break out, you know, and be king of the world, like Titanic or something. But this movie was more mature because it wasn't rebelling against just any sort of traditionalism. It was rebelling against kind of empty legalistic type of traditionalism. You know, it's a...
I don't remember anything about that movie.
Yeah, well, I remember what you thought of that movie.
I liked it.
I liked it because, partly because I'd read Foster before, and I knew that he was kind of a wacky writer, so I really wasn't sure whether they were going to get together or not. A lot of these movies, you can just assume that they will get together at the end. I didn't assume that, and so I was really kind of worried. The patriarch obviously assumed that they would get together, and so he was bored through the whole movie. But I love movies with opera.
No, I just didn't care.
You just didn't care? Well, the other thing was that, you know, the romantic hero in that movie was a particular type of person you definitely don't like.
You know, they should have had her hair and Colin Farrell's eyebrows.
They could have gotten together. Yeah, her
hair. Hey, part of the reason I liked the movie was because, is it Helena?
Bonham Carter.
Is because she looked normal in it.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't look like a witch.
She did not look bizarre, or, you know, she was quite beautiful and innocent looking.
And Johnny Depp and Tim Burton were nowhere to be seen.
And so I really like that. I thought it was refreshing. I'd never seen her look normal.
Well, I liked the movie because despite Daniel Day-Lewis, who was ridiculous, I did not care for him in that movie, but I really liked the fact that...
He was a cartoon.
Bugs Bunny.
He was ridiculous. But that was the whole thing. He wasn't quite a real man. That was part of the point.
That was obvious.
Yeah, well, he was supposed to be a comic character, too.
Who was the blonde-haired guy that was...
Julian, I don't remember his last name.
He was really good. And what's the guy from Sherlock?
Rupert Graves. Yeah.
He did a good job.
Well, you know, and that's probably it. I mean, I do not like movies that, I mean, and I don't remember a lot about that movie, but what did he do? What did he do wrong? The Daniel Day-Lewis character. He was buffoonish, is that right?
He didn't love her.
There was no depth of feeling.
He wanted to,
like in
you know, and the whole idea was he wanted to have her like an ornament.
Yep.
Because he wasn't.
He was interested in impressions.
Which is ridiculous.
Impressing
there are some guys that do that, but I can't imagine. I mean, especially someone like him, it was ridiculous. It was
someone
ridiculous.
Like who? Daniel Day-Lewis.
Like his character.
Cecil.
Yes. So I'm seriously supposed to believe that somebody that looked like him and behaved like him, which was basically a nerd, right?
Yeah.
Had such an ego that he thought that he could win her just so that he could put her on the shelf?
He was like a lord, I think. So
I don't remember that.
You know, there were probably... Well, I mean, that was part of it, but... The whole idea was that he didn't.
And of course, the goofy roundabout guy was the one that right.
Well, I liked him because
he was interesting compared to Cecil.
He was
compared
interesting
compared to Cecil or Cecil.
Yeah.
You know, I would be interesting.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
and that's, you know,
he was interesting, but he was also
very interesting.
He cared about things that mattered. You know, everybody in that movie cared about silly things. about, like, you know, whether you were polite to somebody or not. It doesn't matter whether you're polite. It matters whether you love somebody.
That's right.
Because being polite is...
You can't love everybody.
Well, I know.
Unless we're polite.
Yeah, but what I'm...
Everyone can't love
no, what I'm getting at is that they had taken physical, or they had taken, like, these little rituals of society and made them into ultimate things, you know, and they said that you can't be a proper person unless you follow these little kind of tiny little rules and little regulations and things, when really, you know, sometimes you to do what is right, to actually, then you have to get beyond just the little regulations, you know.
So, like this, you're saying, like the 60s.
Well,
see where that got us.
Well, the,
I think
the difference
what
between those
saying
was,
is that a
I'm
lot of people just put on a face, and you know, she learned in this movie to be real.
Well, as you recall,
you know,
the 50s weren't terrific for a lot of people, too. You know, there were things
for
that
romance. They were terrific.
If you were a,
you know, see what I'm saying? Though? Is that sometimes those little rituals mean something?
Sure, but
I just didn't like the way that it threw that in your face. Is like none of that matters. And you know, you've got to be your own person. It's all just about love. It's just about what you feel. You know, here we go. And so,
I think that that's...
I'll leave you alone.
Well, sure. I think that that's the immediate impression that you might get, but if you look at it more closely, that's not what it's about. We'll have to...
Daryl will agree with me on this.
I'm sure he will, you know, but... actually, I hope he doesn't, because otherwise he's just kind of a grumpy old guy that...
No, he's not a grumpy... I think a practical man will see that.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's not all about being practical.
Hey, how about your topic here? You're talking about historical romances.
Well, we don't have any time left.
Oh, okay.
But did you have any suggestions?
On the historical?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to Jesus juke
you. Oh, boy, here we go. The matriarch, there's nobody better at Jesus juking than the matriarch.
I like the story of Ruth and Boaz in the Bible.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Jesus in the church.
No, but I guess it's not really a Jesus juke. It's just a Bible juke. But I love the story of Ruth and Boaz. I just think it's a beautiful story, and you guys out there probably already know this, but of course, Ruth proposed to Boaz, right?
Yeah, there you go. You're going to marry me. Yes, I am.
when she went to him and laid down at his feet and covered herself with his robe, I think it
yep.
was, that was a proposal.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's just... a beautiful story, you know, of she and her mother-in-law were in dire need of food and everything, and Boaz does marry Ruth, you know, and it's just a story of redemption, and a beautiful story. And of course we have Boaz in our Lord Jesus family tree, right?
Mm-hmm. And Ruth, you know, at that point, it must have been against the law for an Israelite to marry somebody from another culture or another race. That had occurred to me the other day, you know, because she was a Moabite.
She was a Moabite.
And Boaz was an Israelite. And a few generations later, they probably would have been stoned by the by the assembly. You know, but that's right there in Jesus's background. I just think that's really interesting. And, of course, Rahab is also in his family tree.
Yes. Which should give us all hope.
Yeah. Anyway, we better go ahead and wrap this up. Any last comments?
We didn't talk about the Love Boat and its impact on romance in American culture.
That's true.
That ship has sailed.
Okay, well, in the meantime, what are we talking about next week, Patriarch?
You said something earlier tonight about...
Well, we might go to see the Avengers, so...
Yeah, but you can't talk for an hour.
Well, we could talk about superhero movies. The history of the superhero genre, how it got
started.
Haven't we
ever talked about those? We haven't, I don't guess, have we?
No.
I mean, okay.
If you got any better ideas?
I don't have any better ideas. No.
Okay, well, in the meantime, you can find us online at longview95.blogspot.com. Leave us a comment there or by leaving us an email at thepilgrimspodcast@gmail.com. Let us know and we'll read it on the air and discuss what you have to say. Also, we're on Twitter, Grove Boy, Longish, and the Pilgrims Podcast Twitter page. We're on Facebook and Tumblr. And, I suppose that is it for this week.
That's amore.
All the money that e'er I had, I spent it in good company, and all the harm I've ever done, alas, it was to none but me. And all I've done for want of wit, to memory now I can't recall. So fill to me the parting glass, good night and joy be to you all. Sorry for my going away, and all the sweethearts that there I had, they'd wish me one more day to stay.
Drink a health, whatever falls, and jazz.